You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're just going to stand there eating that sushi all night? You haven't even looked at my photorealistic macaroni sculptures.
It's Who Arted with Creative Messiah, Amy Ralphini.
Amy, welcome to the show.
Hey, hi.
Very happy Thursday morning to you.
I'm very happy. I'm happy, and I'm happy that you've said a very happy to me as well, because it's doubled my happiness levels.
Double the happy.
Yeah, and I'm drinking tea with Emma Jamieson.
Today we have art specialist Emma Jamieson, who are giving us some insight into the essence of Renaissance and Baroque art and the powerful Italian women who have helped preserve valuable Italian collections from this era. Oh, Emma, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in, Emma. It's always such a pleasure to get you on the show. You've got at the, well, you personally, at your gallery.
Yeah, me personally.
Your
the Auckland Art Gallery, yeah.
You've got a great collection of Renaissance and Baroque work.
We do indeed, yes.
And so I thought, what a perfect opportunity to teach people what the difference between the two are stylistically, because there's a tangible difference. So can you tell us what the essential differences are between these two styles?
Yeah, I mean, I'll try my best. I'll start with the Baroque because that's my favourite period in art history, and that's from the 17th century. So the 17th century was a period of great unrest. You had the start of Protestantism in the 16th century, which kind of challenged Catholicism, and in response, the Catholic Church were like, we need to fundamentally revise the way that we're conveying our religious messages to people to try and still harness that devotion to the Catholic faith. So they completely revised the way in which they were using paintings from about 1570s onwards. And as a result, artworks have to, from the Catholic Church decree, that artworks had to be instructive and engaging and not include any aspect that was external to the narrative. So no like fussy details, no fussy decorative features that would distract learning of Catholic faith.
That is interesting. But Baroque was after Renaissance, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So basically, to summarise, the church decided to do a rebrand on how they communicate, and they wrote the brand guidelines in the new way was Baroque. But interestingly, you say they eliminated any curly flourishes, but I guess that is Renaissance, but I don't see the Renaissance as that. I see it as being laden with icons and information. But anyway, take it away.
I'll take it away. And so with the Baroque, so you get that real focus on immediacy in the artwork, because artworks had to convey and engage religious audiences immediately. So you get beautiful paintings like by Caravaggio and Van Dyck and Rubens, and it's kind of this really sense of dramatic emotion that transports the viewer into the painting. So you get lots of close crop composition, so the action happening quite close to the edge of the compositional frame. You get lots of gestures coming out towards the audience. You get lots of scenes, which Caravaggio was very much famous for, of people stopping in the middle of something. So Baroque paintings capture the moment just before something is about to happen. So you have to fill in the picture yourself, essentially. The Renaissance, like you were saying, is a lot more pared back, a lot more stripped back. And, you know, people like to associate the Renaissance with quite airy paintings, you know, like Botticelli's Birth of Venus, for example. And that's because in the Renaissance, so the Renaissance is the 16th century, so 100 years before the Baroque. In the Renaissance, they discovered lots of classical texts, and there was this real focus on learning ancient classical texts by Pliny and Plato, and the idea of like the serene, ordered, rational environment. And so artists started exploring with linear perspectives, so things receding realistically backwards into a compositional frame. And that's why you get lots of classical mythological scenes in the Renaissance.
Very interesting. So in a way, prior to the Renaissance, just what was the movement prior to the Renaissance?
It's called like the early Renaissance, and what you get with, they're those beautiful, I mean, it's probably
more,
one of...
Are they more tapestry?
More tapestry, like it's lots of gold, lots of really flat composition, because they still hadn't worked out in the 1300s and early 1400s how to realistically place figures within a painted scene. So you get lots of like awkward, flat religious figures not realistically inhabiting a space. Like, you know that blog, Ugly Renaissance Babies? Most of that work is from the 1300s and early
1400s. You know that blog? That one that you're on every single day.
It's a great one. You should definitely look at it. Yeah.
So that's really interesting as an arc of communicational, visual communicational kind of growth, is that starting from really using symbology or visuals that you could almost say would be like characters or, you know, how we read words, and then actually bringing them to life more and bringing the viewer into engaging more so that they create the moment and then they feel, they experience the moment more.
Yeah.
With Renaissance, I feel that... It feels like it does have the perspective and the depth.
Definitely,
but
yeah.
Also, there's still that sense of symbology of every item on the page. Like you'll get Madonna and Child, then she'll have the background will be of a certain area, and then the herbs and the flowers that are around the rocks or something that she's on will be of a certain era, and meaning something towards what the work is trying to communicate.
And I think what else was really fundamental in the Renaissance, we would really take it for granted now that a painting communicates certain parts of a narrative, a story, like that for us is so, we take it for granted, like it's just common sense for us. But in that period, it was really revolutionary to clearly show different parts of a sequential narrative. And I think one of the first works that did that was in the Brancacci Chapel, and it was a religious story, and you could see different parts of the story in the same panel, which was really revolutionary at
totally.
The time.
Yeah, because that's playing with people's perception of time.
Exactly.
And previous
yeah.
to that, it
was just individual scenes that seemed to exist in this kind of vacuum.
Oh, the human brain.
Indeed, yes.
I'm still a little bit in shock about this being the first time a Botticelli and a Caravaggio have been in the country. I swear a Botticelli was in the country like 20 years ago.
Oh, I wasn't in the country 20 years ago, but so I can't vouch for that. But to my knowledge, it is the first time that the works by Caravaggio and Botticelli are in New Zealand. But it's definitely the first time that a private collection of art from Italy has travelled to New Zealand.
Wow, so exciting. So can you just to summarise a little bit and clarify around the differences between Baroque and Renaissance. So let's take the Botticelli that's in the exhibition down in Art Gallery at the moment.
Yeah.
So it's a Renaissance work. Can you describe it for us as it is? And then can you re-describe it as if it was painted as a Baroque artwork, please?
Sure, I'll try my best. So the Botticelli is called a tondo painting, which means it's a rounded form. And it's surrounded by this beautiful golden frame. The Botticelli is of the Virgin Mary surrounded by angels, and she is in the centre of the composition holding Jesus Christ. And the painting is a really moving moment that foreshadows the tragic fate of both mother and child, as well as a testifying to their close relationship. It's quite an interesting painting for Botticelli because he does normally space out his figures quite a bit, but because of the close format of this painting, they're really tightly compressed. It's a very intimate, close scene. And what's also unusual for Botticelli is he had actually been experimenting with linear perspective, so how figures realistically recede into the space. But in this Botticelli and the Corsini collection, the figures are stacked quite closely together, like in those early Renaissance paintings. Mm. And the reason why possibly he did that was because of this need to create this quite intimate religious scene with which the viewers could contemplate and meditate in front of. Mm. If the painting was a Baroque painting by, say, the likes of Caravaggio, I would say that it would be more of a suspended action. So in the Botticelli work, it's very still. It's just of a mother holding her child and looking thoughtfully down at him. If it was a Baroque painting by Caravaggio, the Virgin Mary would either be looking at us or looking at one of the angels. The angels would be gesturing towards her. There'd be some sort of sense of action. If it was a Caravaggio.
If it was a Caravaggio, would it not just be the death? Like, would he just cut to the chase?
They probably would
have. And
been.
Have the death.
Yeah,
and all the blood and all the spikes.
None of this, like, evocative
it's like,
foreshadowing.
Forget the mother stuff. Let's just jump to the end of the story and give it away there.
Caravaggio was a real fan of, like, the faces recoiled in sudden emotion, like his Bacchus painting. So, I mean, definitely some sort of, like, whiplash action would have been going on if the Botticelli was painted
by
her.
One of the angels would have been, like, blood trickling.
Look of horror for sure, definitely.
Okay. Sorry, I got very excited about that.
But I like it as it is, obviously. So it doesn't need any amendments.
It also has the lighting and the way that those figures have been crafted have that sense of a stone relief. What are they?
Lovely. Yeah, it's definitely the influence of classical sculptures in that painting, I think, especially with the drapery. I mean, the lighting is just so beautiful. Botticelli's used really fine brushwork that creates this kind of almost sculptural effect, and the folds of the fabric do actually look like they are existing in tangible space.
But they're really lightweight as well, and he's got that really nice heavenly feel.
Yeah.
Not heavenly, but super surreal kind of feeling to his works.
Celestial,
that's it.
There we go,
And for those that don't know any Botticelli, you probably actually do. His most famous and well-recognised work would be The Birth of Venus.
The Birth of Venus,
and it's this naked woman standing with her hair twisting off in a massive giant clamshell.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah, it's quite dreamy. Yeah.
Well, thank you. That was very interesting. So, the exhibition has been curated by Dr. Ludovica Zibrigodiani. I always get a little bit excited when I have to say Italian things and then mess
it
up.
I noticed the hand gestures. Yeah,
I know. And Mary Kistler. And Mary Kistler.
Yeah, the lovely Mary,
And it comes from the Corsini family in Florence, Italy.
That's right.
A great Italian family involved with politics and the church. However, keeping hold of and maintaining such a fortune isn't necessarily a walk in the park.
No.
Can you tell us about the woman in this family who kept this collection alive?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting and inspiring tale. So firstly, a really important recent story is in 1944, Principessa Elena, who saved the artworks from the advancing German troops in Florence. And so she hid them, as I said in the last interview, in the Villa La Corti behind a shallow wall. So she was really fundamental in saving the collection from probably inevitable destruction and pillaging. So her four daughters are now responsible for the collection. And so in the organisation of this exhibition, Mary and Ludovica and Mondo Mostre, the organisation in Italy, they were responsible for liaising with the four sisters. And so it's collectively owned by those four sisters. And Livia Branca, who came to New Zealand for the opening, she's their niece and she's responsible for the palazzo itself. And so those four women are really, committed to looking after their collection and as evidenced by this exhibition, making it, accessible to the public and generating new research investigations into the works. Yeah.
And in bringing it to New Zealand, and that they're taking it to Australia afterwards?
Yeah, Western Australia.
Australia. Then in doing so, then we need to, all the gallery repairs works to display that may need it or restores some works.
No, actually that was mostly organised in Italy by the Soprintendenza, because they've got the Ministry of Cultural Heritage in Italy, and they're responsible for making sure that works are stable enough to leave Italy. So actually lots of conservation work was done in Italy, and conservation work has been, implemented by the family as well. What happened in the New Zealand side of things was there are a couple of objects like textiles that we did a little bit of work on here. After they were freighted over.
Did they break on the way?
No, it's just they needed to, because of being in a new environment, it was important to just make sure that they were, because fabrics from like the 19th century, it was really important that they were,
Scotch guarded and stuff.
We wanted to make sure they were protected in the exhibition. And then Art Gallery Western Australia, because we paid this exhibition fee, that covers conservation, and all of the galleries are making sure that the works are preserved as well as they have been.
So actually it's a good thing for the collection to travel, because in a sense it keeps it alive and it keeps it up to scratch and it keeps it restored.
Well, not up to scratch so much. I think it was already up to scratch, but generating those new research possibilities with the catalogue that we've developed. I mean, a lot of that was primary research that Mary and Ludovica and I completed. So that is generating a lot of further discussion about the works, and it's just great that the family tale is told for the first time.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I love the show. It's wonderful. I love that there's some paintings by one of the mothers in there as well, which I love.
Yeah, and actually, fun fact, so the painting of one of the aunts who's looking after the collection is in the show at the moment, and Livia's mother, who's unfortunately deceased now, she's in a painting of her, Livia's mother is in the collection in the exhibition as well, and they were actually the first and the last works that the visiting Corsini family members came to see when they saw the exhibition. So that's a nice heartwarming tale for
that's
you.
That's very heartwarming.
Yes.
Well, on that note, I think we're almost out of time. I just quickly want to find out one thing. Yes. I heard that there was a pasta making workshop going on at the gallery. Has that happened already?
I think it's happened already. But if you're in, if any of you have young family members or children, we've got some children's holiday workshops happening next week on the 4th and 5th of October. The mystery cassone, which is like a little chest, and you pick up items from the chest to make a new artwork. And on the 4th of October, we've got a workshop where you can make your own coat of arms. So if any of you have cute little
Kitty
ones,
wants to do that one.
Yeah, I want to do it. So just look on the website.
You can put it on your new bike, Kitty. Yeah,
indeed, yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Emma, for coming in. We were talking about Renaissance Baroque art in relation to, as well, the Cassini Collection, which is a window into Renaissance Florence, currently on at the Auckland Art Gallery, Toyo Tamaki, on the corner of Kitchener and Wellesley Streets. And that's going till the 21st of January. Lots of interesting things going on down there. Go to aucklandartgallery.com for more information.
Ooh, I like this.
Trey chic.
Trey cool.
Touché.
Chin chin.
That was Who Arted with Amy Ralphini.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.